The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death, and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
I've been shunned by quite a few of the national leaders in the pro-choice movement. I really get this really strong hit that people think that I'm just like totally stupid, and I'm not. I mean, I've got brains and I have ideas, and I just don't really feel like they hear me. So, I mean, I wasn't their chosen one to be their special Jane Roe.
That's Norma McCorvey, the Jane Roe of Roe v. Wade, from a Washington Post video talking about her time in the pro-choice movement. She did spend some time there after being, well, some would say the pawn of the pro-choice movement, the pro-abortion movement, and then later in life, deciding that abortion was wrong, becoming a pro-life advocate, even petitioning all the way to the Supreme Court to have the Roe v. Wade decision overturned or reconsidered. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Norma McCorvey died over the weekend. We're going to talk a little bit about her life and her time in both the pro-choice and the pro-life movements. Clark Forsyth will be our guest. A little bit later on the program, we'll spend some time with Dr. Carl Beckwith. The church will be remembering first century bishop and martyr Polycarp. The account of his martyrdom was circulated along with the Holy Scriptures in the early church as a picture of a martyrdom according to the gospel. We'll talk about Polycarp, his life, and his martyr's death. And then Pastor Jonathan Fisk joins us. We'll be talking Christians, contraception, and the future of the family. He made a presentation at a recent LCMS Life conference titled Demographic Winter and the Church That Prays for Summer. Now, you can join us over the next 2 hours with your questions or your comments, or call in number 1-877-623-6943, or email address talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at @issuesetc, or leave a question, comment, show suggestion at our Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about Norma McCorvey, the Jane Roe of Roe v. Wade, who died on the 18th of February, Clark Forsyth, acting president and senior counsel for Americans United for Life, and author of the book Abuse of Discretion, The Inside Story of Roe v. Wade. Clark, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd. Thanks for having me back.
How did this woman, Norma McCorvey, become the poster child for the push for legalizing abortion nationwide?
Well, she was recruited in 1969-1970 to be the plaintiff by abortion attorneys to challenge the Texas abortion laws. And her case ultimately went up to the Supreme Court and became Roe versus Wade. And a few years after that, she basically revealed to the public that she was Jane Roe.
Did her case already exist, and those who were seeking a path to the Supreme Court simply latch onto it, or was she put forward as a plaintiff in a case intended for that path?
The latter. She was recruited, and she became the main plaintiff. The abortion attorneys wanted to find a pregnant woman who wanted an abortion to challenge the Texas abortion laws. There were, as you know, cases in maybe 20 other states that were trying to do the same thing, but Norma McCorvey was called Jane Roe to protect her privacy. That became the case of Roe versus Wade, which ultimately ended up in the Supreme Court with the case from Georgia called Doe versus Bolton, which involved another woman who was called Mary Doe.
So she was a pregnant woman that the abortion lawyers found as harsh a word to say, a pawn for their legal chess game?
Well, she was clearly used for their purposes of trying to strike down the abortion laws. And, I mean, they used her name, they used her situation, but there wasn't, kind of went off on its own, led by the attorneys, and she was clearly used. She wasn't really directing it. She wasn't controlling it. She wasn't even in the lead. She didn't even give them guidance or any limits to what they could do. So they used her name and her situation, wrote it up in a complaint and filed it in court, and the case took off from there. And Jane Roe was kind of left in the road in Dallas as the case took off.
As the plaintiff, just refresh our memories, what complaint was associated with Norma McCorvey, Jane Roe?
You know, they wrote up her her factual situation that she was pregnant, seeking an abortion, and couldn't get an abortion under the Texas laws because she couldn't claim that her abortion was necessary to save her life, which was the only exception or condition allowed under the Texas law. They filed that in federal court in Dallas in, I think, late 1969 or 1970. And that was the basis. The case took off from there.
How was it that she came to reveal her identity as, I mean, it's hard to say she was the woman behind Roe v. Wade because it sounds like she and her circumstance were just a pretense for the lawyer's case. But how did she come to reveal her part in it?
Well, I suppose several years later, she decided perhaps in conjunction with, at that time, what might have been an abortion rights rally, she revealed to the press her identity. And for a number of years, she was kind of an abortion rights hero. And she would appear at abortion rights rallies until her philosophical and spiritual conversion to become a pro-life activist.
She did say during her time as kind of the pro-choice poster woman appearing at these rallies that she was felt excluded. She was never brought into the inner circle of those who wanted to use her name and her image, that the pro-choicers kind of considered her a backwoods bumpkin. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, she's described that in great detail, and I think it's very credible that they simply wanted to use her situation and could do so under the law to create the case, and as many other attorneys did. I mean, it wasn't a one-off. There were many other cases in many other states, and it just so happened. I mean, you could have had a Smith v. Jones case that ultimately became the Roe v. Wade of abortion, but it happened to be Jane Roe's case. So it was kind of the luck of the draw, in a sense, of all the cases that were trying to get up to the Supreme Court.
What do we know about her change of heart and mind on the abortion issue?
Well, she never had an abortion. She ultimately had three children, and I think that she, at the time of her death, was connected with at least two of the three. She gave them up for adoption, and she became an advocate of adoption. But she never had an abortion, and she gave the children up for adoption. But that really didn't make any difference in the creation of the case. And then years later, she was influenced by friends around her to basically come back to Christianity, which she had grown up in. And she was ultimately baptized, I believe, in the late 1980s, early 1990s. And she's written about that conversion, and she's written about that process. And then after she became a Christian and became pro-life, she testified in Congress against the Roe v. Wade decision, and she, in the early 2000s, she filed a case or a motion to have her original case reopened as a hoped-for pathway to overturn the Roe v. Wade decision. But 12 years ago, actually, I think it's 12 years ago this week, the Supreme Court refused to hear her motion and refused to reopen her case. But she was dedicated from the time of her conversion or shortly thereafter to dedicating her life to trying to overturn the Roe v. Wade decision.
How did pro-choice leaders regard Norma McCorvey after her conversion to the pro-life position?
Well, they immediately shed her, and they defamed her. They questioned her mental capacity. They questioned her mental stability, and they really defamed her throughout the years repeatedly. And you can even see that in some of the articles that have been published since her death in various media outlets, suggesting that she was not mentally stable, even hiding the fact that she became a pro-life advocate and testified before Congress and tried to get her case overturned. The Washington Post, in an article on Saturday or Sunday, used a quote from the time before her conversion in which she said something like, the one thing I regret is I never had an abortion, which is completely inconsistent with her views after her conversion.
So with regard to her trying to reopen that case, just give us a little more details of her trying to have at least petition the Supreme Court to look again at Roe v. Wade.
Well, she went into court, I think it was in 2003, and she filed a motion under the federal court rules and asked that her case be reopened and that the original judgment in Roe versus Wade be overturned. The federal trial court threw that out. It went up to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, the Federal Appeals Court, and that resulted in a very interesting opinion by Edith Jones. The appeals court basically said, as a matter of law, we can't reopen this, but Judge Edith Jones wrote a historic, scathing critique of the court's abortion doctrine. And then, since the appeals court said they couldn't reopen the case, Norma McCorvey took a final appeal up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And 12 years ago this week, the court simply refused to hear it. And that ended her attempt to reopen. But she has continued to speak out and continued to do whatever she could to try to overturn the decision. And I think that her efforts, combined with the efforts of many others over the years, have contributed to make Roe versus Wade unsettled and unstable and fragile. And one of the elements of that strategy campaign to keep Roe unsettled was, in fact, her attempt to reopen it and the historic opinion by Judge Edith Jones. So I hope that Norma died knowing that she had made a great effort and that Roe versus Wade, in fact, I think is more fragile and unsettled than at any time since 1973.
In your opinion, even had Norma McCorvey not changed her position on abortion and not sought to reopen the case and have Roe v. Wade, that decision, evacuated or reconsidered, even if she had not done that, would Roe still be fragile and a flimsy law?
It would. It would. But she made an important contribution. I mean, there are a number of other factors that keep Roe unsettled, because there is state legislation that's been passed by dozens of states that challenge Roe versus Wade. There's the fact that the justices themselves over 44 years can't agree on the basis for abortion. They can't agree on the standard to be applied to state laws. They preside over, I mean, they've had this self-appointed role as a National Abortion Control Board, but can't implement that coherently. And they are challenged by the growing national network of pregnancy care centers and by the annual March for Life. And, I mean, on top of all of that, in the 2016 presidential campaign, you had the Republican presidential candidate promise to appoint pro-life judges, and you had the Republican vice presidential candidate Mike Pence declare, we will overturn Roe versus Wade. And you, I mean, there are many other factors that have contributed to this unsettled, fragile state of Roe versus Wade, but certainly Norma herself contributed to that.
I'm intrigued by something you just said here, finally. You said that the Supreme Court has, in effect, functioned as, I think you said, the National Abortion Control Board. What do you mean by that?
Well, the court, when it struck down the, when it declared or issued its ruling in Roe versus Wade and Doe versus Bolton, the Georgia case, it didn't just strike down the Texas and Georgia laws. It wrote a new national law. The Supreme Court and through the lower federal courts, the Supreme Court and the justices are the created themselves the National Abortion Control Board because they control abortion law. They control abortion doctrine. They control abortion policies. And this ultimately the standards that apply to any abortion clinic in any town or state across the country. And it's an absurd role for the justices. They can't perform that role like conscientious public health officials in, you know, any other town or state apply to any other medical procedure in the country. And I think that even last year, you'll recall in June, the court struck down Texas health and safety regulations. And I think that decision, however an unfortunate loss it was at the time, shows that the justices are just incompetent to be the National Abortion Control Board. And the more they decide cases, the more they prove it. And that's contributed to the unsettling, too.
Clark Forsythe is acting president and senior counsel for Americans United for Life, author of the book Abuse of Discretion, The Inside Story of Roe v. Wade. When you purchase this book at our website using the Amazon link, a percentage of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Listen on Demand, and look for Abuse of Discretion by Clark Forsythe. Clark, thank you very much.
Thanks, Todd.
Dr. Carl Beckwith will be with us of Beeson Divinity School on the other side of the break. On this Wednesday afternoon, we will be remembering first century bishop and martyr Polycarp, especially the account of his martyrdom. Stay tuned.
Did you make a New Year's resolution to get in shape this year? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness at Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness can help you keep your New Year's resolution. Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. Performancefitness618.com.
Are you a homeschool parent looking for help teaching certain subjects? Or do you want your student to study the history, languages, and literature of Western civilization? Memoria Press Online Academy has live online classes with master teachers to help you. Their teachers have years of experience teaching, delighting, and moving students literally from all around the world. Your homeschool year doesn't have to be difficult. Visit MemoriaPressAcademy.com or call 877-745-8866.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Come listen to Drs. Alvin Schmidt and Roland Elke at the 3rd Annual Concordia Apologetics Conference, Cultures in Collision, Faith and a Fractured World, this March 3rd and 4th at Concordia University, Wisconsin. You can register online at www.cuw.edu/apologetics or call 262-243-4343. That's the Concordia Apologetics Conference, March 3rd and 4th at Concordia University, Wisconsin.
Oh, morning star, oh, morning star, shine with far and bright a troll.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.